Welcome to the Powered Services Podcast, your one-stop shop for all the information, strategies, and insights you need to supercharge your MSP. Get ready to hear from other MSPs and industry experts in the trenches and behind the scenes to help you change the future of your MSP and increase your MRR. Now, here's your host, Dan Tomaszewski.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Powered Services Podcast. We're excited to have you along. It's going to be a great show today. We're getting into a topic with that I think is important, right, Will?
It's absolutely important, man.
Yes.
Especially with the climate we find ourselves in today, right?
Yeah, like I said, think. No, this is a serious subject. I think it's something that we've got someone who's in the trenches and doing this. And Will, why don't you kind of set up the show today and introduce our guest?
Yeah, so today we've got Tony Rucci joining us on the show. And Tony's a guy I met a couple of years ago. He's actually, we came into contact via phone, but it turns out he's only about an hour and a half away from me. So when Tony comes on, he's going to sound like me. And that's good. And we're finally glad to have somebody that talks right on the phone besides myself. And, Tony comes to us. He's a retired counterintelligence specialist, former U.S. Army warrant officer, and he's been in the field for a long time, nearly 40 years. He's seen and experienced a lot. He's currently operating a private security practice, performing pen tests, passive network assessments. Incident response is one of the things we want to talk a little bit about today, but wide variety of things that Tony can perform in regards to services and a great depth of knowledge. And Tony, we're grateful that you joined us on the show today.
Well, thanks, Will and Dan. Appreciate y'all having me in, and look forward to good conversation today.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be good. I know that you and I've had a lot of phone conversations over the past couple of years, Tony, and always feel like I learned something, and some of it scares me, but it gets me in headspace where I know what I need to look out for. And maybe we start there. Tell us a little bit about the types of services that you perform, and kind of what are you seeing out there? What's prevalent right now that you're responding to?
Yeah, I run as you mentioned, a private security practice. I focus on a lot of the proactive security measures, but my background is a counterintelligence special agent. I focused on computer crimes early in my career, and did a lot of forensics work and cut my teeth in that space where people were committing espionage back in the late 80s, early 90s, and beginning to use computers to facilitate the espionage and being able to use that forensic capability for those investigations. And that's transitioned into a nice, fold into the private sector. And, so I do a lot of proactive security, helping folks get ahead of the fight and set themselves up for success, if and when it does go sideways for them to lessen the blow. But at the same time, I also do a lot of incident response, and ransomware has just been, off the charts in the last handful of years. We've been doing that for a good period of years, as well as, wire fraud and those types of things. And so, what we've been seeing for the last handful of years has been a huge uptick in ransomware. While everybody's been working remote, and, especially during the kickoff of the pandemic, when folks were expecting to go to work that Monday and they were told to stay home and run to Walmart, run to Best Buy, or order a laptop and just build an account, we'll figure it out. And they just open up all kinds of ports so they can access the servers at work. And, the attackers have been off and running ever since then. So, saw a lot of that. And, it's changing, the landscape quite a bit on how people are defending their networks and operating.
Yeah, you bring up, you mentioned the remote workforce has really accelerated it. One of the things, and you mentioned another thing around incident response plans. A lot of, our listeners are all MSPs. And I think what's cool is you're kind of talking to us what you're seeing in the front line. Not a lot of businesses have an incident response plan. I mean, at least the ones that we see on a day in and day out basis. Like, what are you seeing when it comes to that, incident response plan, the importance of it, and just kind of, can you elaborate a little bit more on what you see and what you do when it comes to that?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Usually the first contact I have with the new client is that very conversation. Hey, things just went sideways. You know, it's been a long weekend. We just came back from a holiday and things are wrapped up and we can't get in. We got this nice splash screen on all of our machines. You know, what do we do? And we're told to call you or whatever that might be. And, you know, they don't necessarily have those incident response plans. In a lot of cases, they don't even know who to call. You know, they're calling, you know, whoever's, you know, the next district over or just somebody in the organization who might know a little bit more about or they think they know about computers, and they're really just beside themselves. And so being able to help pull them together and help coach them along if I'm not able to get there on site or get somebody there to them rapidly and kind of steer them if they even have insurance, you know, steering them to that provider. A lot of times that's oversight, even though they might have, you know, some cyber liability coverage. They don't even think about that the first time things go sideways. It's like, we never even realized that that was something we needed to do. But, you know, that becomes part of that critique conversation, you know, after the fact is, look, you need to start putting this together, put whoever's, you know, on that incident response team or who you think might be on there, put them on that call tree. And let's start gaming this out and start, you know, for those who call you ahead of time, you know, you start putting together those workshops or tabletops with them and say, let's get into conference room on a Friday afternoon or something and, you know, write ransomware up on the screen and say, go, what are you going to do? And just kind of walk down each of the disciplines in the organization, the department heads. They don't, a lot of times they're going to, you know, hey, we're going to call Fred over in IT because, you know, everything points back to Fred. It's probably his fault. But, you know, it really boils down to having a sense of, you know, prioritizing the need and necessity and what some of those resources are out there for them with regards to, you know, some companies don't even have legal. They don't have a spokesperson. They don't have, you know, a relationship with local law enforcement or even a third party, you know, responder, somebody they can reach out to, even if they don't put them on retainer, they just need to have that relationship with somebody who's local, who can get to them quickly and put boots on the ground to help them put those fires out. Because some of these organizations, they might have one person or nobody in the organization who's really, you know, hands-on IT. They just outsource everything. It's full outsource and they call somebody and they go, all right, go over and cycle this on and off. You know, the old proverbial, have you turn it off and on again? That's how a lot of companies operate. It's pretty spooky in a lot of cases.
Yeah. You said something, Tony, there that made my ears kind of perk up. And it was, a lot of people don't have a relationship already in place with an incident response organization person, somebody that can help them out, you know, when it does kind of go sideways on them. If, you know, as Dan mentioned, we have MSPs in our audience. That's primarily all that we have listening. If we have somebody out there that's running an MSP and they wanted to engage with somebody, how would they go about finding somebody and kind of vetting that person to make sure that, you know, they can deliver and they're able to help them when the need arises and kind of, you know, it's all going sideways?
I think a lot of that really just boils down to relationship building and a level of comfort. You know, it's pretty easy to read through. Once you have a bit of a conversation, it's pretty easy to read through who's trying to sell you something and who's going to be that mainstay resource for you. You know, if you look at their website, you know, somebody who might be around your physical proximity or, you know, able to jump to you and, you know, one flight or less, you know, and you look at their website and if it doesn't say anything about security, it doesn't say anything about incident response, or all it says is, you know, we'll provide you everything as a service, but there's nothing really relating to security on there. That's probably not who you're going to want to have that relationship with. But, you know, it's good to have that initial call and vet it out. Maybe they just don't have that on their site. But, you know, being able to talk to them about proactive security measures and, you know, being there for them. In some cases, they don't even care about having a retainer. It's not like a law firm in a lot of cases. In order for you to call me when things go sideways, you have to have a retainer already in place. While that helps, it makes you more of a priority for them. If that makes sense. But, a lot of cases, they just want to be the one that you call when things go sideways. And you can also walk through some tabletops with them and you build that relationship. You see how they interact, how they treat your organization. Are they talking down to you or are they talking with you? In a lot of cases, because that's one of the things that, is pretty constant in the security community is, everybody's stupid and I can't believe you did that. And oh my gosh, you clicked on that. Those are just ridiculous, mannerisms that fire me up because, not everybody lives and breathes security. A lot of these IT folks, they're doing the best they can with what they have. They have very minimal resources. A lot of them get a small budget to keep the lights on and the data flowing in their organization. And they don't get a thank you in most cases. And when things go sideways, everybody points at them and ready to launch darts at them. So it's a thankless job. And I think anybody who's in the professional services or the IT services or the help desk, especially will tell you, nobody tells them thank you. Even when you do help them fix something, it's like, yeah, okay, you just did your job, move on. But, you just solved a big monumental problem for them and it just blows right by them.
You mentioned, Tony, that ransomware attacks are definitely picking up momentum and going. Can you kind of elaborate like what you're seeing in terms of like the ransomware attacks that are coming on the SMB market?
Yeah, it used to be that you would see ransomware kind of spray and pray type of attacks, a few years ago. Now they're very targeted. They know exactly who they're hitting these days. When you try to, if you find yourself in that situation where you're negotiating with them, you try to play that, we're just a poor school district or we're just a poor, small rural community. They're ready to throw data back at you because they've already exfiltrated data from your organization and they can tell you what your budget is, how much your expenditures are, and they know how much you're able to pay. They've got a lot of intelligence they're able to collect because they're targeting those organizations that do have funds available and resources. And that way they know they're going to get paid because there's a lot of incentivized activity on the attackers that we see nowadays because ransomware as a service, you can go out and purchase it, jump on the dark web somewhere and you can pay somebody a few $100 to go after somebody. But at the same time, these ransomware gangs are hiring low-level, tier one apprentices, and their incentive is you get the victim to pay at all costs because you're getting a percentage and you don't get paid if they don't pay. And so there's a lot of incentive for them, but they're hitting, hospitals, larger school districts with budgets and that type of thing, financial sector and law firms with a lot of high visible clients. We see a lot of that. But at the same time, they're hitting MSPs now because I don't need to just go hit one company. I can hit an MSP and impact, 30 companies that they're dealing with. And now it even hurts and I can, throw a couple more, decimals over on the Bitcoin on the ransom for them, because if they lose all their clients, they're out of business. And so they've got to do something if they don't have the appropriate resources and resiliency. But, a couple of years ago, we saw, I guess it was late 2020 when we saw the transition from, all you have to do is make sure you have a good backup and practice it and you're good to go. It doesn't matter, how hard you get hit. You can just, spin up your resources. Now they're dumping your data. So now it comes back to your transparency in industry, depending on the industry you're in, who your clients are. If you're a law firm and you've got high visible, high profile clients and their data gets dumped, what's that worth to you? That type of thing, and making sure that even if you are able to recover that data internally, are you willing to pay to not have it dumped out there? And it goes out quick out there. They don't play games anymore. So we're seeing a lot of that. But, you know, even so, ransomware kind of trickled off. It only had a 15-16% increase in the last half of 2021. It was really escalating much quicker earlier on, but it started to slow down a little bit. And, you know, I'm seeing you know, more, you know, wire fraud and, you know, targeted, you know, crimes that way, where, you know, people are interdicting emails right before they get ready to throw a ACH or a wire fraud or wire transfer, and intercepting that and, you know, rerouting a couple $100,000 pretty quick.
Hey, you've mentioned it a couple of times, Tony, you know, kind of indirectly, but products in your stack. I know you mentioned earlier that, you know, an IT organization probably doesn't have unlimited resources. They may have to do some picking and choosing as to what they have in their stack as far as the defense goes. And then you talked about, hey, you know, the backup is not enough anymore. You can't just have a backup and say, whatever happens, you know, we'll just come back from the backup and, you know, we'll carry on with our business. But doesn't really work like that anymore. So you've got to have defenses in place. And maybe you can't, you know, shoot the moon and get everything. Under those constraints, you know, what are the things that you would suggest that an MSP kind of has to have in the stack? What are the basics? What are the fundamentals?
Change management. You know, if you're able to determine some changes in your network that you're not making, you know, implementing, that's key. You know, I can go on all day long about, you know, making sure that you've got two-factor authentication, and that's a huge, you know, differentiator for, you know, anybody's playbook. But, you know, being able to determine that, you know, Will logs in every day from the office or from a specific IP at his home. And, you know, we know what his VPN is set and configured out, yada, yada. We've got his profile. All of a sudden, Will logs in from Brazil. You know, if he didn't jump from a different VPN, exit node or something like that, you know, all of a sudden, it's different. And so there's a little bit of a change. And if he started pivoting around trying to log into Dan's machine, and that's part of, you know, the profile on allowance in there and the configuration controls, that should just raise the question that they need to ask that. One of the things that I do when I'm doing pen testing is I give the client, like my VPNs, I log all the VPN addresses that I'm using, the IPs, while I'm doing the open source side of it, all the OSINT collection ahead of time. That's just to see if there's any kind of events that are triggered as I begin escalating, you know, my activity and turning up the volume to see what kind of monitoring they have. And it helps them tune their tools. And that way, that if they've got continuous monitoring, that's a huge differentiator for them as well. But, you know, being able to monitor and determine any kind of change, and the logging. I can't beat logging up enough. I think every conversation that I have with somebody is make sure that you're, you know, expanding your logging, rotations, as opposed to, you know, default on a lot of this gear is, you know, 72 hours. And, you know, by the time they ever realize that they've been compromised, they've been in there several weeks. And, you know, one of the last activities is that, you know, they'll try to clean up their tracks on the way out and burn a bunch of logs. But, you know, those are things that we look for, and it helps identify, you know, who came in, or was it Tony who clicked on that email that brought somebody in and invited them in, and then they pivoted and then called out, you know, to really bring the ransomware in, because quite frankly, it's sophisticated enough now, and they've matured enough where they're not triggering your event logs, and not triggering your perimeter when they're coming in. You know, when you click on something that brings them in, it's nothing that's gonna, you know, be an alarm. It's the call out for that payload, that secondary, that's gonna really be the significant game changer.
Yeah. And your answer there, Tony, where you're talking about kind of tracking what's happening internally and looking at some logs and stuff, we're kind of talking indirectly about insider threat a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for me, if you looked at my Twitter account, my Twitter handle is Insider Threats. I've had it since way back yonder. 2006, I guess it is. But as a counter intel guy, that's what we focus on. You know, yes, the big threat out there is the hackers and the attackers and everybody, you know, trying to commit those crimes. But at the same time, you can't forget about the fact that we are the biggest risk to an organization. You know, everybody is internally because we're weak and we fall into routine and complacency, and we become that insider threat. And that's a lot of what my focus is, you know, briefed on that for years at, you know, Black Hat and DEF CON and those other events and things like that on insider threats specifically, just because if you're not taking time to educate them and you take care of the people, we have a saying in the counterintelligence world, if you don't take care of people, they'll take care of you. Or if you take care of people, they'll take care of you. If you don't take care of people, they'll take care of you. And that's usually that last step on the way out of the organization, you know, as they clean house. I just wrapped up a case a couple of weeks ago where there was an insider threat where somebody on the way out, they let them persist in their organization. They gave them 2 months notice and they let them full access the whole time. And so they, you know, essentially, you know, potentially cleaned house on them. But, you know, that's the thing. And not every insider threat is malicious and they're not all bad people. It's a lot of times it's, hey, this is a really cool screensaver, or this is a really nice, you know, widget to add on to my desktop. It was a cool clock and I wanted to have that on there. And yeah, it came out of Shenzhen or it came out of one of the tech universities in China. And, you know, yeah, my phone was blowing up over there. But yeah, they get. Sorry, guys.
No, it's all right.
Yeah,
shut my phone off, and it kept on. I'm hearing it in here, so it's overriding everything.
We can't talk about tech without some tech difficulties.
Yeah, right? Anybody know a good number for help desk?
And look at, as we kind of try to wrap up. I mean, you've been given a lot of things, and we definitely want to have you back in talking about more. I think something like right now that we want to kind of bring up is, you know, the cyber attack activity. You know, we know there's this war going on over in Ukraine with Russia and in Ukraine. And, you know, we keep hearing from a lot of people like be on extra guard, you know, lots of things could be happening. Are we seeing anything? Like, are you seeing anything that's happening because of this? Or, what things do you think we should be, you know, on guard for more based on your knowledge of historically what's happened when these types of events are going on?
Well, I can't count how many times somebody's called me up or just, you know, in casual conversation, even asked, hey, am I a bigger threat? Is my hospital a higher visible threat now because of what's going on? You know, the Russians are going after everybody. Ukraine's going after. And, you know, suffice to say that, you know, you're a small rural hospital or whatever your organization is, you're not higher on Putin's radar. You know, they're not going to come after your hospital specifically. However, you've got lots of organizations who've stepped up. The Ministry of Digital Defense for Ukraine has you know, called out for a lot of hacker groups to call to arms to go after Russia. And they've done that. And they've taken down a lot of the Russian federal websites. The Russians have done the exact same thing. Anonymous has stepped up and they're taken out. They've completely compromised the TV stations. But man, I'll send you guys some slide decks too that I've been working on in the background here just for common knowledge. Because when you start digging for this and it's all over the dark web, that they're just beating each other up in the cyber world. They've taken out, Ukraine has taken out some of the Russian nuke sites and they've completely compromised their file servers and they're downloading thousands upon thousands of documents. And there's what's significant about that is there are some unique nuclear facility operations guides that are, there's only two of them in the world and they're both in Russia. And they've got some unique design specs that a lot of these developing countries would be really interested in. And so they're dishing these off already to them. Out there, they pulled all these docs and design specs out, and so you know that as well as some of their naval fleet, their black naval fleet has been compromised. A lot of their systems, and you know, so they're able to intercept communications in the whole nine yards. So it's not getting a lot of press in, you know, the open news, but I mean, they're banging on each other back and forth. And so the so what on that is, while you've got all these organizations that are standing up and they've come to work with each of the opposing sides, you know, anybody who's an adversary to either one of them becomes a potential victim of these circumstances, because they're just doing open source. And, you know, as we know with, you know, you start scanning specific regions for vulnerabilities and open threats, and look at all the recent open, all the recent vulnerabilities we've had with, you know, Logjam and Proxy Shell, Print Nightmare, all these things that still haven't been patched yet in a lot of these machines. So it's real simplistic to just scan and pick a state, you know, Tennessee, where I live, let's see how many, you know, Logjam vulnerabilities still exist, and I can exploit them. And it's exactly what anybody could do. And so you become a victim of circumstances just because you're broadcasting. So, you know, patch up, make sure that you're following the guidelines on locking your machines down and those types of things. Don't want to raise your visibility and your signature any more than you have to. And that's going to, you know, help you fly below that type of radar. But, you know, if you're a defense contractor, yes, you're on that target list. You know, you already know that, though. That's nothing new. But it's only enhanced, you know, in these types of events.
Yeah, Tony, this has been the great conversation. I knew it would be. Of course, we're kind of pushing close on time, so we'll go ahead and wrap things up. But if we've got an MSP out there that's listening and they have a need for pen testing, incident response, something along those nature things that you offer, are you available? Can they get in touch with you and kind of engage for services?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you can hit me on, you know, my website, tony@tonyrucci.com. Call me direct, 865-719-1715. Just Google the name. It's out there. And I mean, it's one of those things. I do work, you know, all across continental United States and overseas. I've got clients overseas that are hard to get to right now, as a matter of fact. But, you know, we can get there or find somebody who is in your general area that can help you out. You know, we don't mind paying it forward. We don't need to eat it all, and we know we can't eat it all, and we don't mind paying it forward.
No, we'll definitely have you back because I think these are the topics. I mean, just hearing that what you're seeing, what's going on, how you're responding, all of those things are real important. So we really do appreciate you taking the time to be with us, and let's do a part two and dive into this some more. Here in the coming months.
Glad to. Thanks, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Thanks, everyone. That's it for this episode, everyone. And stay tuned for another episode next week. And until next time, have a great day.
See you guys.
Thank you for listening to the Powered Services Podcast with Dan Tomaszewski. We're dedicated to giving you practical information, tactics, and strategies that you can use to supercharge your MSP. If you liked today's episode, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcast, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Until next time, this is the Powered Services Podcast, signing off.